Punctuation by Cory Doctorow. Recorded by Patrick Nielsen Hayden. Hi, Mom. Wow, you won't believe what happened today. First of all, I was nearly late for work because my new roommate is worried about the electrical and he pulled out all the plugs last night, even my alarm clock. His name is Tony, and I think he's either weird or crazy, or maybe both. He keeps saying that the company uses the plugs to listen to our minds. He unplugged all the electricals and put tape over them in the middle of the night. When I woke up this morning, my room was totally black. I had my flashlight from work on the chair near my bed, and I used that to find the living room. Tony was sitting in his shorts on the sofa in the dark, watching the plug behind the TV. "Hey," I said, "you watch the television, not the plug." And then he said some bad words and told me that he didn't want me plugging in anything. He is skinny, like Jimmy got when he had the AIDS. He's not sick. He's hyperkinetic, like Manny was when he went to the special school. That is why he is management and I still work on a truck. If I have to be skinny and crazy to be management, I'll take the truck all day long. So I got dressed and ran out of the apt and took all those stairs up to the slidewalk because there was a big lineup of people waiting for the elevators, like always. I didn't have time to wait because my watch was already warning me that I was going to be late, as if I didn't know. I ran all the way to the garage, all around the people on the sidewalk who don't know how to walk right and stand life like you always told me. Life up here in the city is different from back home, and no doubt at all. My watch knew that I wasn't in the garage at 8:25, and it started counting down the minutes till I was late. Its voice gets higher and more excited as I get closer to being late, and I thought I was going to bust something as I ran through the door of the garage. It told me that I had a close call, but I'd made it, and I felt pretty good about that. Wendell, the day supervisor, smiled at me when I came in, which he never does, and I got nervous that maybe my watch was wrong about my being late, except that my watch is never wrong. "Jap," he said, "you're on special truck 982 today." I said, "what's that?" And he told me it was a great honor, and then he said, "I'd like you to meet your pusher for today, Rehnquist." So I shook Rehnquist's hand. He was a kind of old, fat, short guy, and his uniform was old-fashioned looking and not as smart as the one I wear, you like so much in the photo I sent home last month. So right away, I thought that he was some kind of moron and I was being punished for being late. He said, "pleased to meet you, Jasper," and he didn't sound like a moron, but more like one of the guys in your TV stories that are rich and powerful and in charge. I said, "call me Jap, everyone else does," and he said 20 years ago that all Nippon Anti-Defamation League would have put a stop to that, and I laughed even though I didn't get the joke until later. It's that Jap is also short for Japanese, which is like the Moonies, but they're from Korea. "Let's roll 'em out," Rehnquist said, and hopped in the back of the truck and held on tight. I got in and did my 10-point startup safety check like they taught me. By point four, he was banging on the side of the truck and saying, "let's go," and I leaned out my window and said I wouldn't skip my safety check for nobody, and he said some bad words, and I said if I would have to start over again, he'd better keep quiet or we'd never get out of there. My watch said I did right, which made me feel good. I hope Rehnquist's watch told him off for trying to shortcut on safety. We rolled out a little late. I drove to my first pickup, which is the site of Finance 38. Finance 38 is a very, very tall building and all no windows because they don't want spies from other cities seeing them and their money. I drove over the severe tire damage yard and passed through three security gates and backed up to the shredder bay. I did my 4-point shutdown safety check and Rehnquist banged on the truck again and said more bad words, but I ignored him. His watch must be busy all the time, telling him not to be so mean. I went through the metal detector and into the Finance 38, and the guard's watch and my watch talked to each other for a while, and then the guard stopped pointing his gun at me and said, "you're late now, move this stuff out of here," and I said, "okay," and started moving the boxes. Finance 38's boxes are very heavy, and there sure are a lot of them. Every day, there are 50 boxes, as big as the big TV at the community center back home. I'm getting very strong working at this job, Mom. My arms are bigger every morning. I moved the boxes back to the truck. I left them for Rehnquist, who started opening them and pushing the papers inside to the hopper. On my normal truck, 3528, my pusher is Vasquez, who's very fast at pushing the papers. Rehnquist was slow, so that by the time I'd moved half the boxes back to the truck, there was no more room to move the rest. I thought, for a guy who's always in a big hurry, he sure works slow. So I went into the truck with my flashlight, and there was Rehnquist, and do you know what he was doing? He was reading the papers before putting them into the shredder. "What are you doing?" I said. "You aren't allowed to do that." He gave me a look, not like he was angry, but like he thought I was a moron or something. My watch told me that I should report him right away, and I started to go back into Finance 38 to use the guard's phone, but Rehnquist did something with his own watch, and my watch stopped working. "You broke my watch," I said to him. He said, "that's from the Blues Brothers." And he said, "what do they do, attach the disposal baskets to the laser printers? This is all junk. None of this needs secure disposal." And I said, "you broke my watch, Rehnquist, and everything in the finance buildings needs secure disposal. It's in the manual." He said, "I didn't break your watch. I just shut it off for a while. You'll be okay, trust me. Come here, have a look at this." "Mom, I did it. I read the paper in his hand with my flashlight." It said, "Johnson, your performance review has been rescheduled for 16:30 hours on Friday, 78th floor boardroom." "This is crap," Rehnquist said. "This doesn't need secure disposal." He kept digging through the papers and looking at them before shoving them into the shredder. Every time I looked at one, he said, "crap," then put it in. I couldn't stop watching. I thought we were going to be fired or put in jail. Then he said, "aha." He showed me the paper. It said confidential at the top, and I felt like I was going to sick up. I was so scared. It said reorg chart, and it had lots of names with dotted lines connecting them to other names. Rehnquist winked at me and put it in his pocket. His old-fashioned uniform had pockets. I thought I figured it out then. Rehnquist was a spy from another city. They talk about spies in basic training and what to do when you found one. You're supposed to make sure they won't go anywhere, then contact security. So I ran as quick as I could out of the truck and slammed the door and security locked it from the outside. And then I climbed over all the boxes of untraded documents from Finance 38 and ran to the security guard. I said, "There's a spy in my truck and he's reading the papers." And he said, "What?" I said, "My pusher is a spy. I caught him reading the papers and putting them in his pockets." The security guard looked like he thought I was crazy. I said, "Really?" And he picked up his phone, spoke in securities to the other security guards, and then there were sirens and lots of cars and guards with armor and guns. "Mom!" They surrounded the truck and unlocked it, and Rehnquist stepped out with his hands in his pockets. He said, "Quality auditor, boys, radio it in." The security guards looked like they wanted to shoot him, but one of them talked into his phone and then shouted at all the other security guards and securities, and they all went away. Rehnquist walked over to me and said, "Jap, you aren't the brightest bulb on the marquee, but you think fast and you follow orders." I said, "I am as smart as the next person and I do my job." I said to the security guard from Finance 38, "Aren't you going to arrest him? He's a spy." And the security guard said, "Look, he's management. He's allowed to do this." And Rehnquist put his arm around my shoulders and said, "You're stuck in a loop, son. New data. I'm not a spy. I'm your boss. You did right, even if you have blown the audit. How'd you like a promotion?" And I said, "You're management?" And then, "Do you know what?" He said, "Jap, my boyo, I am Rehnquist J. McBride, CEO, President, and Chairman of the Board of the Philo Gator Corporation, the Incorporated Township of Philo Gator, Ontario, and Philo Gator International Holdings Limited. I'm in charge." "Hi, Mom. Thanks for the pictures from Buddy's wedding. He sure looks handsome in a suit. You're right, he should dress nice more. I'm dressing nice, too. Rehnquist J. McBride has made me a special vice president. I'm management. Not management like my crazy roommate Tony, who isn't my roommate anymore. They moved him and gave me the whole app to myself, and I can plug in anything I want to, whenever I want to. I'm real brass. I only drive my old truck number 3528 2 days a week now, and Vasquez has a different driver who I've never met the other 4 days. Vasquez says he is not as careful as I am, and sometimes he makes them late. And he says, now that I'm running the show, can I make sure that his performance appraisal shows that it's the new guy's fault? I said I would look into it. I haven't had a chance to look into it yet, because the other 4 days, I go to Operations 1 and sit in a beautiful office on the top floor, 100 floors above ground. They keep me busy, Mom. Rehnquist comes into my office and sits in the chair by the door and talks on his phone and asks me all kinds of crazy questions like, do I think that the pinheads and HR know their ass from a hole in the ground? And I say, yes. And he says, what makes you think so? So I told him about basic training and how I learned the history of Philo Gator and memorized our vision statement, which is the Philo Gator organization is a diverse multinational sovereign power that is a world-class leader in its fields of operations, a status that it has achieved through the diligence and responsibility of its human resources, which are the heart of every organization. I told him about how the HR sergeant was always fair about our training appraisals, and how we always knew when someone had been goofing in the showers and made sure they got disciplined. And I told him about how I played the anthill simulator and learned how the one drone doesn't know why he's moving a grain of sand, but from the queen's seat in the middle it all makes sense. I told him that whenever my watch asked me to do something that I didn't understand, or when something weird happens to me, like my crazy roommate Tony covering all the plugs, that I remember the anthill simulator and I do my job. Rehnquist laughed and said, Jap, my bright boy, you are a treasure, a walking focus group. I'm not paying you enough. And then he gave me a raise. He called someone on his phone and said, give my boy a raise. And they did. I am sending home a little money as an attachment with this note and a picture of me in my special vice president's suit. Every afternoon, Rehnquist shuts off his phone and my watch and a pretty secretary wheels in a big TV. We watch movies. Rehnquist says he likes to unwind with a movie at the end of the day. The movies are old and funny, and I've never seen them before. Rehnquist sure has, though. He knows most of them by heart. Yesterday, we watched one called Educating Rita, and Rehnquist told me I am like Rita. I already had that figured out, though. Rita is a dumb girl from England Limited, and she works as a hairdresser until someone from management teaches her all about life. I like that movie a lot. I think that Rehnquist will teach me lots and lots about management, too. My crazy old roommate Tony works in Operations 1, too, in the basement. I know this because in the morning I saw him getting off the slidewalk and going to the basement elevators. He sure looked worried. I ran up to him and said hi, and he looked at me in my suit and his eyes bugged out, and then he said hi, too. I told Rehnquist about him, and he said that he thought Tony had interesting prospects and he would keep an eye on him. I tried to tell him about Vasquez and the new guy, but then his phone rang and he talked for a long time. He sounded angry, and he shouted that he didn't care what it took. Get him Redmond, even if you have to nuke it. I have a small TV on my desk, and I used it to look up Redmond, but it kept saying, see Microsoft. I asked Rehnquist about it, and he said that Redmond is what Microsoft used to be called before they incorporated. He is always talking like that, calling things by their old names. It was quitting time then, so I went home and wrote you this letter. Hi, Mom. I'm real sorry to hear about Buddy. I know he must feel sad. I didn't think that Carla was a spy either, but now that she's been arrested, I guess that Buddy should feel lucky that he didn't stay married to her long enough to have little spy babies. This is my third week as special vice president. I'm doing well for myself. Crazy Tony is now my assistant. He sits at a smaller desk in my office with me and Rehnquist, and Rehnquist asks him the same crazy questions he asks me. But Tony's answers are always weird. He has been in the management stream since the second grade, and he has read all kinds of TV that I've never even heard of. Rehnquist doesn't know about it either. He says that Tony is paranoid, which means that he thinks everyone is out to get him. Tony said that even paranoids have enemies, and Rehnquist laughed so much I thought he would bust. Some days, Rehnquist is very sad, and on those days, we just watch movies. I've seen My Fair Lady, Pygmalion, Trading Places, The Prince and the Pauper, and a whole bunch more. They're all about poor people like you and me who become rich and powerful like Rehnquist. Mom, I think it means that Rehnquist wants me to be in charge. I haven't said anything, but I'm trying to get ready. I am learning word power at night with the TV in my apt. I'm not using it yet because I want to make sure I am very good at it before I do. I told Rehnquist about Vasquez and the new guy, and you know what he did? He sat down at my desk and he opened up Vasquez's file on my TV and he gave him excellence in all of his appraisal categories. Can you believe it? There's nothing he can't do. He said, "You gotta give the working stiffs a Christmas present now and then, right, Jeb?" I said, "Sure, but I don't know. The performance appraisals are supposed to be scrupulously fair. That's one of my power words. It means very. It doesn't seem right to just treat them like a bunch of numbers. It's Vasquez's whole life. It's good that Rehnquist gave him all excellence, because that means that he'll probably be promoted this year. Maybe he'll end up a dispatcher, even a trainer. But what if Rehnquist decided to put needs improvements down? It would have ruined Vasquez for the rest of his life. It's full of arbitrary. That means it doesn't make sense. I haven't talked to Rehnquist about this. I don't want to seem stupid. Tony and I talked about it on the slidewalk, though. He said that I was very stupid if I still believed that performance appraisals meant anything. He said that the only appraisal that counts is the one they get from reading your mind. I laughed and called him paranoid. He said, "I take that shit from Rehnquist, but I don't have to take it from an ignorant farm boy like you." I got scared for a second, and then I remembered that I was Tony's boss. "Tony," I said, "I should fire you on the spot." That was from one of the movies we watched. Then he looked scared and said, "Sorry, sorry." I said, "What makes you think anyone could read your mind?" And he said, "What makes you think they can't?" I said, "Well, if Rehnquist could read my mind, he would have known that I was going to call out security the day we met at Finance 38. Tony said, "Rehnquist is just a puppet of the ones in charge. They pull his strings and he dances for them." I said I didn't understand, and Tony looked at me with pity. He said, "The ones in charge are running all the cities, Microsoft in England and BBDO and Red Stripe. They know everything that's going on. This is all a game for them." And I said, "Boy, you don't know anything. BBDO is our biggest enemy. Philogator is locked in a death struggle with them. It said so on the news this morning." "Jap," Tony said, "we're not fighting BBDO. Philogator is. We're riding a slidewalk back home. Can't you tell the difference between fighting and riding a slidewalk?" And I said, "Of course I can. That's full of sophistry. Another power word, which means cow patties. We're part of Philogator. Philogator is fighting BBDO. That means we're fighting BBDO. Ergo, that means so there." Tony laughed and said, "That's where you're wrong. Philogator is just the long arm of the ones in charge. He probably slept with the wife of the one in charge who runs BBDO, and now they're fighting it out." I laughed at Tony and said, "You keep talking about the ones in charge. Everything you say is stupid unless you believe in the ones in charge. What makes you think that there are any ones in charge?" "There has to be," Tony said. "Who else is running the show?" "Rehnquist is," I said. Tony looked at me like I was stupid. I'm pretty sick of him looking at me like that. Tony said, "If Rehnquist is running the show, then how come he has time to waste on you?" I wanted to say something, but I didn't know what. Tony sure makes me angry. I got off the slidewalk and went home and wrote you this letter. "Hi, Mom. Gosh, poor Buddy. How can he be a spy? I played with him all my life. I never saw him being a spy. He'd have to be pretty sneaky to be a spy. I don't think he's a spy. I'm sure that the manager at his disciplinary hearing will figure out that he couldn't be a spy." I am learning power punctuation now. I have been using my power words with Rehnquist all week, but he doesn't seem to notice. I think that if I start sending him written reports that are power punctuated, he'll notice that I'm really making effortful progress. Today, Rehnquist sent Tony back to his old office to bring up all their secure document storage containers. It was the first time that Rehnquist and I were alone together since Tony was made my assistant, and I had a private talk with Rehnquist. I said, "Are you really in charge?" Rehnquist stared at me. "What is that supposed to mean?" he said. I said, "Tony says that if you were in charge, you wouldn't have time to squander with us. He says, you're just a puppet of the ones in charge." Rehnquist smiled and shook his head. He said, "Tony thinks he's pretty smart, huh?" I smiled back at him because I thought he thought Tony was crazy. "He sure does," I said. Rehnquist said, "Well, even paranoids have enemies." I said, "Wow, do you mean Tony is right?" He said, "Well, no one except weirdos like me would want to know what's in Tony's brain, so I don't think he really has to worry about anyone reading his mind. But he's right about one thing. Even though I'm in charge of Philogator, I'm not necessarily running the show. I have investors. Pray God you'd never meet them, Jap. They'd eat you alive." I said, "But they taught me in basic that you started Philogator with just one truck and a shredder, and that you shrewdly parlayed your meager holdings into a powerful organization by strategically deploying your human resources." He laughed. strategically deploying human resources, I paid the mob to scare the shit out of the guys driving the other trucks. I thought that the drivers of the other trucks must have been pretty gutless if they let someone scare them away from their appointed responsibilities, but I didn't say so. Rehnquist looks at me like he was sorry he'd said what he said. Oh, I didn't hurt anyone, just put the fear of God in them. Then I picked up their routes, borrowed some cash, bought some more trucks, and the rest is history. I just sort of stumbled along with it, best as I could. Sometimes I wonder how it all happened. One minute you're shredding papers in Toronto, the next you're buying the place. I can't say that I was a whole lot smarter than any of the other guys who were doing the same thing. I did design the uniforms, though. Pretty sharp. Nicer than the potato sacks you guys wear these days. I like my uniform, Mom, and I wear it with pride. If it had been crazy Tony making fun of my uniform, I would have maybe hit him, but when Rehnquist said it, I just had to look like I understood and smile at him. I said, you've done a lot more than design the uniforms. You run the show. You said so. He looked at me like I was a little kid and shook his head. If I was running the show, would I be amusing myself by pulling random quality audits on the trucks? Crazy Tony walked in then. He looked at us and said, what? What are you two guys talking about? Rehnquist said, Jap here was just explaining to me how you don't think I'm in charge. Tony looked scared and Rehnquist winked at me. Tony looked at me like he wanted to kill me. Tony said, do you really want to discuss this here, here, in this place, with all the ears and eyes in this room? Rehnquist laughed and laughed and laughed. Ears and eyes. Tony, you're beautiful, you twisty little weirdo. A real laugh riot. Tony's face got red, and he looked fit to bust. Fine, then. Let's talk. Talk about the Calabrese and the gnomes and the tongs and the masons and the posses. How do you like that? Rehnquist tried to stop laughing, but he couldn't. Jap, there's nothing more dangerous than a little knowledge. He didn't say it to me, though. He said it to Tony. Tony was so angry, he shook. Just then, Rehnquist's phone rang. He said, McBride here, which is how he always answers. And he said, yes, sir, that's fabulous. He covered the bottom of the phone and said, why don't you guys take the rest of the day off, huh? Then he opened the door and sent us out. When I got home, my TV was already on, with a special bulletin. BBDNO was now our sister city, and the two of us were fighting a life-and-death battle with Microsoft. There was also a message from Rehnquist, and attached to it was a copy of another old movie, 1984. It was boring. Hi, Mom. I can't believe it. They gave Buddy life? Jeez, I'm going to talk to Rehnquist about this. This is ridiculous. Today was Tuesday, so I was on the truck with Vasquez. I got to the garage nice and early, and my watch congratulated me. It kind of bothered me. I guess I'm just getting used to working in my office with the watch switched off. By the time we made our first stop at HR 102, I was ready to throw my watch out the window. It had told me 8 times how great I was when I got to the garage, when I did my safety check, when I stopped at 3 red lights, when I backed up to the document disposal dock, when I cleared security, and when I lifted the boxes with my legs instead of my back. To tell you the truth, it made me feel pretty stupid. I felt like I was a puppy getting patted on the head. By lunch, my watch had given me 57 positive feedbacks. I mentioned it to Vasquez. He said, I don't know what you're complaining about. It beats having it shout at you all the time. It just means you're doing all right. When I'm out with a new guy, this thing never shuts up. It just yammers on and on about how late we are, how many more pickups we have to do, what percent of our pickups we've been late for. I got so mad last week, I shouted at it, don't tell me, tell the retard who's driving. We both laughed at that. I said, sure, it's better to get loved off than it is to get chewed out, but don't you feel like an idiot having a machine telling you what a great job you're doing? My watch said that I was lowering morale and I should stop. I got so angry, Mom. I told it to mind its own business. It said that it was minding its own business, and did I want it to connect me with a maintenance operator to evaluate its judgment? I'd never mouthed off to my watch before. The idea of talking to a real person about it scared me, but I remembered that even though I was driving a truck, I was also a special vice president, and that made me almost everybody's boss. I said, yes! Vasquez looked at me like I'd gone nuts. A few seconds later, a new voice came out of my watch. How can I help you, Mr. Whitehead? The voice was smooth and oily, like the man from Physical Plant who used to come around to collect the rent back home. All of a sudden, I didn't know what to say. I said, my watch is irritating me. The voice said, have you developed a rash? Is there visible chafing? I said, no, it's irritating me mentally. It never shuts up. The voice didn't say anything for a while. Then it said, well, from my records, I see that you have a 98% positive feedback index. In fact, your watch hasn't given you any corrective feedback in weeks, with the exception of a mild correction about anti-morale speculations. I felt stupid, like one of those guys in BASIC who carped about every little thing. I said, well, I'm just getting tired of having a machine tell me when I'm right and when I'm wrong. I can figure that out on my own. The voice said, I see. And then it didn't say anything. I tried to wait until the voice said something else, but the quiet made me very nervous. I said, I don't mean to be rude or anything. I am very conscientious about my job. It's just that I feel like a moron or something, always having the watch tell me what I'm doing. I knew that I wasn't expressing myself very well, but I couldn't remember any of my power words just then. It bugs me, you know? The voice said, I'm sorry, but I'm afraid that's not my business. I'm in maintenance. If you have a concern about HR policy, you'll need to take it up with them. I thought about my HR sergeant in BASIC and tried to imagine telling him that I didn't want my watch to talk to me anymore and nearly jumped out of my skin. That's okay, I said. My lunch is almost over. I'll try them after my shift. The voice said, "Thank you for calling maintenance. Have a nice day." Then my watch told me it was time to get in the truck and start driving again. Vasquez kept looking at me all day like I was some kind of crazy. "Hi, Mom. Tell Buddy he doesn't have to keep calling me to say thanks. I'm just glad that he and Carla are all right. Tell him to enjoy his promotion." When I got to the office this morning, I found Rinquist wearing his old-fashioned pusher's uniform. I hadn't seen it since the day we met. I was surprised by how normal he looked in it. He could have been any pusher. "Well, aren't you dressed for success?" I asked him, ironically. He spun around and said, "I've got something new. For 3 of the days that you're here, I'll be on a truck with Vasquez. You fill in for me, take any calls, handle any business, order up some movies. We'll meet up on the 4th day here, and I'll answer any questions you have. If something urgent comes up, give me a call." I felt a little out of my depth, but I wanted to demonstrate my take-charge attitude to Rinquist, so I smiled and said, "Can do, boss. Knock 'em dead." Tony came in and snorted a snide laugh at Rinquist. Rinquist raised an eyebrow at me, and I took the hint. "What are you smirking at, mister?" I barked, like my old Sarge. "You find something amusing about the official uniform of a representative of this organization?" He cast his eyes down and mumbled, "No." I was enjoying myself. I said, "I can't hear you, mister." Tony looked at me, his eyes focused in space beside my head. "No, sir," he said. "Get downstairs and see what the pinheads on the 3rd floor are shredding. Sort it, box it, and have it on my desk by lunch. Hear me?" "Yes, sir," Tony shouted and hustled out of my office. Rinquist shook his head and looked admiringly at me. "Sonny boy, you're going to do just fine," he said. "You know it," I said. Rinquist gave me the big thumbs up and left me alone. So there I was, alone, in my office, in charge, sort of. I played with my TV for a while. The TV at the office gave me all kinds of access that I didn't have at home. I clicked on something and there were the personnel files. I felt like a snoop, but it was too much fun to stop. I opened my file and Vasquez's and a whole bunch more. Boy, the company sure knows a lot about us. My file went all the way back to the infirmary where I was born, and then I clicked on your name and there was everything about you. "Mom, I didn't know you had your tubes tied." I followed our family tree up and down and I came to Buddy. His file was spotless all the way up to the spying thing. I clicked on the name of the security manager who, quote, caught, unquote, him. And you know what? He was engaged to Carla last year. Carla is his ex-girlfriend. Well, it was pretty easy to see what was going on, let me tell you. Buddy got married to Carla, and her ex-boyfriend had them locked up. I tell you, I was so angry, I felt like I would bust. But I'm smarter than that. All it took was a few minutes typing, and wham, I'd gotten Buddy and Carla out of jail, given them promotions, and I had the security manager busted down to a janitor. I bet that confused him. So it really wasn't much. It scares me to have that much power, Mom, but it feels good, too. I made sure that all my friends back home were set up all right, too. You just wait till your Christmas bonus, Mom. Tony came up at lunchtime with 3 big boxes of papers. He'd sorted out the memos, personal documents, and the interdepartmental communications. They were pretty interesting reading, especially the personal documents. Shopping lists, letters home, love notes, gossip. It was like being the queen ant sitting in the middle of the hill, seeing what all the drones were up to. I sent Tony out to get some more. It was getting on to movie time when the phone on my desk rang. I answered it. "Jasper Whitehead, Special Vice President." The person on the phone shouted at me, "Get me McBride now!" I felt sick. I said, "I'm sorry, he's not available right now. I'm filling in for him. Can I be of service?" The person laughed at me. "Well, maybe you can at that, son. Rinquist has been promising to do something for me for months now. I guess he's just been too busy. Do you have his access codes?" I said I did and turned on my TV. "Good boy," he said. "Now I want you to find docket 09.3457. You know how to open a docket?" I told him I did, and I found the docket. It was called Microsoft, and it had a long action item list attached to it. I didn't really get most of the action items, but they were all checked off except one. "Okay, there's an unchecked item at the bottom of that list. It's called Deploy Strategic Negotiation Tool. You see it?" I said I did. "Check it off," he said. I did. The TV asked me if I was sure. I said I was. The TV asked me again. I said I was again. I told the man I was done. "Good kid. Thanks. Tell McBride I like his new hire." He laughed again and hung up before I could say, "You're welcome." My phone rang again. It was a reporter from PR43, and she wanted to know about my dynamic leadership in handling the Microsoft crisis. I didn't really understand the question, but they taught me what to say to the press in basic. I said, "The PhiloGator organization is a diverse, multinational, sovereign power that is a world-class leader in its fields of operations, a status that it has achieved through the diligence and responsibility of its human resources, which are the heart of every organization." The reporter sounded impressed. I thanked her and hung up and turned on the TV and flipped around. There was a reporter lady on the screen, showing satellite maps of Microsoft like a weather map. Except that instead of lightning bolts or a smiling sun, there were tanks and soldiers and flames. The TV said that bold directives from Special Vice President Jasper Whitehead had brought an end to the Microsoft conflict. It said that a classified number of PhiloGator troops had occupied the conflict zone, deploying strategic neurotoxins and non-lethal influenza vectors, resulting in an estimated 85% compliance and conversion rate among the Microsoftians. Tony came in with more boxes and looked at me. He said, "God, what's eating you?" I told him. I didn't know what else to do. I thought that maybe I could get Rinquist on the phone, but he'd left me in charge. Tony smiled, but it wasn't a happy smile. "Well, there you go. You made your first executive decision." I said, "I didn't make any decision." He just laughed and pointed to the TV, which was showing pictures of a city just like Philogator, the buildings and all collapsed and burning. He said, "Sure looks like an executive decision to me." The picture panned over an apartment building that was split down the middle, the apartments naked and exposed, the people who lived there dead or sprawled or alive or hanging over the edge, vomiting. Those poor people. I didn't know what I was doing. I spent all last night throwing up, and I'm not sure if I'm going to go into the office today. Hi, Mom. Well, I didn't go to work yesterday. Instead, I got out of bed, sat on the sofa in my shorts, and turned on the movies. My watch got loud and angry, so I stuck it underneath my pillow. Then messages started appearing on my TV. I ignored them. I ate some cereal around 11, and I threw it up right away, so I stopped trying. Someone knocked on my door after lunch, but I was watching a good part in Wall Street, so I didn't answer it. I fell asleep after Wall Street and woke up after 18 hours because someone was really giving my door a pounding. I opened the door, not caring that I was wearing my shorts. It was Rehnquist. He looked sad and beaten. You know what he did? He gave me a hug. Boy, that was weird. He came in and sat on the sofa. I sat next to him. He didn't say anything, just picked up the remote and put on a funny movie, Blazing Saddles. When that was over, he put on The Princess Bride. I never laughed so much. We watched movies all night. They were all funny. They took my mind off things. We both fell asleep, sitting on the sofa, but when I woke up, I was in bed and Rehnquist had put the blanket over me. He was asleep on the sofa. His phone was on the TV and its batteries were on the floor. I was really hungry, so I ate three bowls of cereal and some toast and an apple. I must have woken Rehnquist up because he came into the kitchen. "Little man, you had a busy day, huh?" he said. I said, "I can't do it." He got a Gator Cola out of my fridge and drank it. It was pretty strange to have the CEO of the whole company drinking a Gok in my kitchen for breakfast. It really made him seem like you and me, not like a powerful guy from the stories. He burped. He said, "I understand." I said, "Why did you do this to me?" He said, "You've been in my shoes now. Wouldn't you do anything to get out of them?" I said, "But why me?" He sighed. He said, "This sounds worse than I mean it. I thought you were ignorant enough to enjoy it." I said, "Thanks a lot. Is there anyone out there who doesn't think I'm a retard?" He said, "I don't mean it in a bad way, really. I thought you were naive enough to just do the job, take the perks, and sleep well at night. I was wrong. You're too smart." It didn't make me feel any better. I went back and sat in the sofa and put on a movie, Horse Feathers. Rehnquist watched the movie with me, and when he was over, he said, "You don't have to do the job." I said, "So what now? You pick some other poor retard and give him the old screw job?" He said, "I guess so." I said, "In that case, I'll do it." His mouth dropped. He sat down and put on a movie, Pink Flamingos. What a sick movie. When it was over, he said, "In that case, I'll do it." And then I had the best idea I've ever had. It was so good, I couldn't say anything for 5 whole minutes. "Mom, you sure didn't raise any idiots." "Hi, Mom." "Well, today was just fine. Me and Rehnquist got to the garage in the nick of time, and it's a good thing that he turned our watches down because they give me a headache." Vasquez was waiting for us when we got there, and he had on his mad face for the other guys, but when me and Rehnquist got on the truck, he smiled and winked at us. I drove, and Rehnquist hung onto the back, and he shouted at me to go faster, and I just ignored him. He kept on shouting, saying, "You pinhead, my grandma drives faster than you do, and she's been dead for years." And that made me laugh so hard I nearly rolled the truck, and Rehnquist nearly fell off, and he was pretty quiet after that. We got to Finance 38, and I started lifting the boxes, and Rehnquist, as usual, took too long to push them. The security guard and me both laughed at the big pile of boxes outside the truck, and he offered me a smoke, but I said no thanks. I went inside and told Rehnquist to get it in gear, and he just tossed me the paper that he was reading. It said, "Memo to all employees regarding new security measures," and underneath it said, "Effective immediately, all AC outlets are to be covered when not in use." We laughed and laughed and laughed, and then my watch blipped back on even though Rehnquist had turned it off. It said, "Laugh it up, retards," in Tony's voice. Rehnquist put his arm around my shoulders and said, "Jap, my prodigy, when you're right, you are right. He's the perfect man for the job."
This is the first story I ever sold to Patrick Nielsen Hayden, who also bought The Things That Make Me Weak and Strange Get Engineered Away, and all of my novels. I wrote it in one big gulp while shut in a hotel room in Montreal on a business trip. It was snowing outside, and I could see the shredding vans moving through the streets below, and I typed and typed until my hands hurt.